it wasn't working. I finally said, okay, forget that. I said it right in the mic. The audience was laughing with me. They were rooting for me. I could feel it. So I started singing it a cappella. Just me and my voice singing the song I'd written. I'd worked hard on it. I'd polished it up from beginning to end. There wasn't a stray word in the whole thing, and it was just me and my tambourine with a stomp of my feet.
I was there behind her, tapping a beat out on the body of the guitar for her, helping her out. The crowd was into it. They were watching our every move.
It was such a rush, singing like that. Singing a song that I felt in my heart. Words that I had written that were all mine. I watched the people at the front of the crowd, listening to me, hearing me. These people from a different country, people I'd never met in my life. I felt connected to them in a way that I hadn't felt connected to anyone before. It is what I have always loved about music, not the sounds or the crowds or the good times, as much as the words, the emotions, and the stories, the truth that you can let flow right out of your mouth. Music can dig, you know? It can take a shovel to your chest and just start digging until it hits something. That night, singing that just reaffirmed that I wanted to put out an album of my own songs.
Billy, I was standing backstage watching Daisy and Eddie when she started singing When You Fly Low. She was good. Better than I'd realized.
Billy was staring at her.
When I was done, the audience was hooting and hollering, and I felt like I'd gone out there and done the very best with what I had. I felt like I'd really turned it around and put on a good show for them.
After she finished the song, I heard her saying goodbye to the audience, and I thought we could do Honeycomb now, just me and her.
Graham, I was surprised to see Billy going out there.
I used my usual line. That's it for me tonight. It's time for the six. Everybody, get your hands together. But in the middle of me talking, Billy walked out onto the stage. Billy really shined on stage. Some people, you bathe them in those lights and they disappear, but some people, they glow. Billy was like that. I mean, off stage, no. Off stage, he was sullen and sober, and he barely had any sense of humor that I could see. At that point, I thought he was sort of a bore, to be honest with you. But on stage, he looked like there was no place he'd rather be than standing right there with you.
I was sitting there with the guitar, and Billy comes up to me. I said, "What do you want me to play?" But instead, Billy puts his hand out, asking for my guitar. I'm the fucking guitarist, and he's trying to take my guitar. He said, "Can I borrow it, man?" I wanted to say, "No, you cannot borrow it." But what could I do? I'm standing up in front of thousands of people. I handed it over, and Billy took it and walked right up to the mic with Daisy. I'm standing there with my dick in my hand, no reason to be on the stage. I had to slink off.
I waved to the crowd and said, "How about this Daisy Jones, everybody?" The audience cheered. "Do you all mind if I ask Daisy a question?" I put my hand on the mic and I said, "How about Honeycomb now? Just me and you."
I said, "All right, let's do it." There was only one mic out there, so Billy stood right next to me. He smelled like Old Spice and his breath smelled like cigarettes and banaca.
I started playing it acoustic.
It was a bit slower than we normally played the song. It gave it a tender feel, and he started singing, "One day things will quiet down. We'll pick it all up and move town. We'll walk through the switchgrass down to the rocks, and the kids will come around."
And Daisy sang, "Oh honey, I can wait to call that home. I can wait for the blooms and the honeycomb."
You know how sometimes people will describe other people and say they make you feel like you're the only one in the room? Billy and Daisy could both do that. But they somehow did it with each other. They each seemed like they thought the other one was the only person in the room, like we were watching two people who didn't realize thousands of people were watching them.
Billy was a great guitar player. There was an intricacy, a delicateness when he played.
At that slower tempo, the song started to seem even more intimate. It was gentler and softer. And I was sort of taken aback in that moment that Daisy could so easily go where I was taking us. If I played slower, she could bring a warmth to it. If I played faster, she'd bring the energy. She was so easy to be good with.
When we finished, he put the guitar in one hand and he grabbed my hand with the other. All the skin on the soft side of his fingers was calloused. Just by touching you, he'd scrape you.
Daisy and I waved to the audience, and they cheered and whooped and hollered.
And then Billy said, "All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are the Six." And the rest of the band came out on stage and went right into Hold Your Breath.
I came back out onto that stage, and my guitar is sitting on the side there, and I have to go and pick it up. And that chapped my ass. It's not enough he tells me how to do my job, he controls when we can go on tour, now he's taking my goddamn instrument from me and taking my place on stage, and he can't even bother to hand it back to me when I get back up there? Do you understand where I'm coming from?
As they were all walking out, I whispered into Billy's ear, "Should I leave?" And he shook his head no. So I joined in, started harmonizing when I could, banging my tambourine. It was such a fun show being up there with them the whole time.
I don't remember why Daisy stayed that night. I think I assumed she'd leave, but when she didn't, I thought, all right then, I guess she's staying. I mean, the whole night was a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants kind of deal.
Warren. I swear to you, Karen had this I-just-got-laid vibe to her all night. And I was convinced Bones was lighting her special.
I leaned over to Eddie between one of the songs, and I was going to thank him for earlier, but he wouldn't even look at me. I couldn't get his eye.
I was so over Billy's nice guy routine. He was an asshole. A complete and utter selfish prick. Sorry to say, but that's how I saw it. To be honest, I still see it that way now.
I finally tapped Eddie on the shoulder, right before the finale. I said, "Thanks, man. I just wanted to really give him a good show since Rolling Stone is out there."
He said he'd normally let me play, but since it was Rolling Stone, he wanted to really do it right.
Graham. Pete gave me a look between sets, and I was trying to figure out what the problem was. He finally nodded toward Eddie. "Look, I got it. With Billy, it was easy to feel like a second-class citizen. But how we all feel about it doesn't change the fact that people were paying money to see Billy. People liked his songs the way he wrote them. They liked watching him up there. Billy was right to go out onto that stage and take Eddie's guitar. It wasn't respectful, necessarily. It certainly wasn't flattering or nice, but it made for a better show. The band was a meritocracy for the most part, even though it functioned like a dictatorship. Billy wasn't in charge because he was a jerk. He was in charge because he had the most talent. I had told Eddie before, it's a losing battle if you're going to try to compete with Billy. That's why I don't." Eddie didn't get that.
We ended the show by playing Around to You with Daisy harmonizing with Billy for the whole song. We hadn't done a pure vocal harmony song before. It sounded good. It seemed like Daisy and Billy had a sort of unspoken language. They could pick up stuff real quick with each other.
When we ended that song, I thought that was the best show we'd ever played. I turned back to the band and I said, "Great job, everybody."
Eddie got really heated and he snapped, "So happy to please you, boss."
I should have read the situation, just backed away, but I didn't. I don't know what I said, but clearly, whatever it was, I shouldn't have said it.
Billy got up close to me and said, "Don't be a dick to me just because you're having a bad night." And that was it for me. You know why? Because I'd had a great night. I played great that night. So fuck him. And that's what I said. I said, "Fuck you, man." And Billy said, "Take it down a notch, all right?"
I probably told him to calm down or something.
Just because something doesn't matter to Billy doesn't mean it doesn't matter to me, and I was real sick and tired of people expecting me to feel exactly Billy's way about something.
I looked out to the crowd thinking nothing was going on, and I said, "Thanks, everybody. We're the six."
Right before the lights went out, I looked over at Eddie, and I saw him lift the guitar off his shoulders, and I could just tell.
Eddie took his guitar and lifted it into the air.
It just came smashing down.
I smashed my guitar and walked off. I instantly regretted it. It was a 68 Les Paul.
Warren. The neck broke off of it, and Eddie just swung it and let it land on the ground, and he walked off. I thought about kicking my snare just to join the fun, but it was a Ludwig. You don't go kicking a Ludwig.
Rod. When they came off the stage, I was of two minds. On the one hand, they had just put on a crack fire show. On the other hand, I was afraid Eddie might slug Billy if given the chance. And Jonah Berg was about to come backstage. So, when I saw Eddie, I pulled him aside and gave him a glass of water and told him to take five.
Rod tried to get me to back off. I said, "You get Billy to back off."
You know, some days, you're just trying to get your job done. And musicians can make that a lot of fun or a real drag. Billy came off the stage as everybody else trickled down. I said to him, "Don't start, all right? Just put it behind you. Jonah Berg's coming back here any second, and you need to keep the good show going."
It was a great show, a great show. I felt like dynamite after that show.
Jonah Berg, rock journalist, Rolling Stone, 1971 to 1983. When I first came back and met the band after the Glasgow show, I was surprised at the level of camaraderie. They were out there rocking out, smashing guitars, but backstage, everything seemed really calm. They seemed completely normal, which is weird for rock stars. But the six was never what you expect.
Karen, it was so much pretending. Billy and Daisy are pretending they normally hang out after shows, which they had never done. Eddie's pretending he doesn't hate Billy's guts. I mean, obviously we were all preoccupied with other things that night, and we all just had to put it aside to show Jonah Berg a good time.
Billy. Jonah was a cool guy. Kind of a shaggy look to him. We were hanging out for a few minutes backstage, and I offered him a beer. I had a Coke. He said, "You're not drinking?" I said, "Not tonight." I didn't want my personal life to be any journalist's business. I was very protective of that, of what I'd put my family through. No need to air any of that type of dirty laundry.
Warren. Somehow we all ended up at a piano bar a few blocks away. It was the first time that all of us went out together. The six of us and Daisy, too. Daisy was wearing this coat over her shorts and shirt. The coat was longer than her shorts, and it had real deep pockets. And when we got into the bar, she pulled a few pills out of those deep pockets and threw them back with the beer. I said, "What you got there?" Jonah was up at the bar ordering drinks. Daisy said, "Don't tell anybody. I don't want to hear about it from Karen. She thinks I quit." I said, "I'm not asking so I can rat on you. I'm asking so I can have one." Daisy smiled and handed me another one from her pocket. She put it in my hand and it had lint on it. There were just loose pills in her pockets. She had pills in all her pockets back then.
I'm sitting down with Jonah and he's asking me questions about how we got started and what's next for us and all that.
When you're interviewing a band, you're interested in talking to everybody because a good story can come from anyone. But you're also keenly aware that it's people like Billy and Daisy, maybe Graham, Karen, that the readership is interested in.
Eddie. Of course, Billy corners Jonah, hogs his attention. Pete kept telling me to light a doobie and chill out.
When everybody else was over talking to the guy at the piano, I pulled Graham into the ladies' bathroom.
Graham. I'm not about to go telling who did what, where, in public.
Billy. I was surprised to find myself having a good time. I mean, I knew Eddie hated my guts, but the rest of us were getting along well, and it was fun being out again. And we just played this great show.
Daisy. Some of my best nights back then were the nights I hit the dope just right. Perfect amount of coke, perfect timing on the pills, with just enough champagne to keep me bubbly.
Karen. After Graham and I rejoined the party, I sat down with Daisy and split a bottle of wine. Or maybe it was that we each had our own bottle.
One thing led to another.
Jonah Berg. I think it was me who suggested they play something.
I ended up on top of the piano belting out Mustang Sally.
You have not seen anything until you've seen Daisy Jones dancing on a piano in a fur coat with no shoes on, singing Mustang Sally.
I don't remember how I ended up on the piano.
Daisy pulled Billy onto the piano.
The next thing I know, I'm singing with her.
Would Billy have agreed to get on top of a piano with Daisy Jones if Jonah Berg wasn't there?
This was not a cool bar. Most places by that point, if you sang a few bars of Honeycomb, you'd get a, "Oh man, that's you?" These guys had no idea.
When the song was over, Billy went to get down off the piano and Daisy grabbed his hand, held him up there. I said to the piano player, "Do you know Jackie Wilson said?" When he shook his head, I said, "May I?" He got up and let me sit down and I started playing.
Graham. Daisy and Billy just nailed it. The whole place was excited, dancing and singing along. Even the guy Karen had kicked off the piano was singing the chorus with them. Dang-a-lang-lang, you know, that whole thing.
Jonah Berg. They were magnetic. That's the only word for it. Magnetic.
Billy. When the bar started to close, Daisy and I got down off the piano and this guy said to us, "You know, you two should take your thing on the road." Daisy and I looked at each other and laughed. I said, "That's a great idea. I'll think on it."
Karen. We all walked back to the hotel together.
Daisy. I was behind the rest of the group putting my shoes on, and I thought I was alone until I saw that Billy hung back for me. He was standing there, with his hands in his pockets, shoulders hunched, looking at me as I put my sandals on. He said, "I want to give the other guys time to talk to Jonah." The two of us walked a bit slower behind the rest of them, talking about how much we both loved Van Morrison.
We got to the hotel lobby and said goodbye to Jonah.
I excused myself and went back to my hotel. I knew what I wanted to write about, and I was eager to get started.
Karen, I told everybody I was going to bed.
Graham, I got off the elevator and acted like I was going to my room, and then I went straight to Karen's.
Billy and I walked back to our rooms, still talking.
I'd left the door open a crack for Graham.
Eddie, I was so glad to be rid of Jonah and not have to pretend I could stand Billy anymore. I smoked a bowl with Pete and went to bed.
Billy and I were walking down the hall, and as we got to my door, I said, "Do you want to come in?" I was just enjoying the conversation we were having. We were finally getting to know each other, but when I said it, Billy looked down at the floor and said, "I don't think that's a good idea." When I shut the door behind me alone in my room, I felt so stupid. It was so obvious that he thought I was hitting on him, and that made me so sad.
When she took her key out of her pocket, she also took out a bag of coke. She was going into her room, and she was going to, at the very least, have a bump. I didn't want to be around it. I couldn't go into that room.
I had thought for a moment that he and I could be friends, that Billy could see me as an equal. Instead, I was a woman he shouldn't be alone with.
I knew myself, and it just wasn't an option. So it all had to stop right there. Daisy and I had just put on this great show together, and we'd had a great night together. She was a knockout. She really was. There was no denying it. Her eyes were big and her voice was gorgeous. Her legs were long. Her smile was... it was infectious. You could see her smile, and then you'd watch smiles open up on the faces of the people around her like a virus passing through. She was fun to be around. But she was... look, Daisy was barefoot when it was cold, wearing jackets when it was hot, sweating no matter the temperature. She never thought before she spoke. She seemed sort of manic and half delusional sometimes. She was a drug addict. The type of addict that thinks that other people don't know she's using, which is maybe the worst type of addict of all. There was no way, no matter what was happening, even if I wanted to, that I could let myself be around Daisy Jones.
I didn't know why he insisted on rejecting me time and again.
When someone's presence gives you energy, when it riles up something in you the way Daisy did for me, you can turn that energy into lust or love or hate. I felt most comfortable hating her. It was my only choice.
Jonah Berg. From my vantage point, the biggest part of what made that band original and first rate was the combination of Daisy and Billy. Daisy's solo album was nothing compared to what the Six was doing, and the Six without Daisy wasn't anything near what they were with her. Daisy was an integral, necessary, inescapable part of the Six. She belonged in the band. So that's what I wrote.
Rod brought us the article before it came out, and when I saw the headline, I was so excited. I loved it.
I knew the headline before I even finished writing it. The Six That Should Be Seven.
Rod. It was a great cover. A clear shot of all of them on stage together. Billy and Daisy singing into the same mic. Graham and Karen looking at each other. Everybody else really rocking out. In the foreground were about four or five people holding up lighters in the audience. And then there was the headline.
Warren. We were on the cover of Rolling Stone. Rolling goddamn Stone. I mean, you get jaded about a lot of things when you're ascending, but not that.
Billy. I grabbed the paper from Rod.
I don't think Billy was happy about it.
The Six That Should Be Seven.
I believe Billy's exact words were, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
I mean, are you fucking kidding me?
Daisy, I knew not to say a single thing about that article. None of us acknowledged it except Rod and I when no one else was around. Rod told me that if I wanted to officially join the Six, I should just hang tight and the opportunity might present itself.
Rod. Billy started to calm down after a few days. By the time we all got back on the plane to head to L.A., he was downright reasonable.
I wasn't trying to be ignorant. I was aware of the fact that our biggest hit had been with Daisy, and Teddy had been floating the idea of another song or two with Daisy in the future. I knew that we were more mainstream, more marketable with Daisy. Obviously, I was aware enough to see that. But I was taken by surprise at the idea of having her formally join the band, and also that the suggestion was made so publicly.
Graham. The article was about how good we were with Daisy. Sure, it was with Daisy, but I really felt like the takeaway was how good we were.
Eddie. By the time the article came out, the tour was over. The seven of us, Rod, the engineers, the roadies, we were all headed home.
Warren. We had to take a commercial flight back to the States. I felt like a pauper.
I got out of my seat pretty soon after we took off. I walked over to Graham and Karen. I said, "What would it look like, do you think, letting Daisy join the band?"
I thought the article was right. She was an honorary part of the group. Why not make it official? Why not have her on all her songs?
I told Billy to let her join.
They were no help.
At one point in the flight, Billy was sitting next to me making a list of pros and cons, you know, whether Daisy should join the band or not. And I see Karen coming out of the bathroom looking like somebody's balder, all flushed and her hair messed up. So I turn around and who's mysteriously gone from his seat? Bones.
I'm sitting in the back of the plane, and I could see Graham getting up. Karen's walking around, Billy's talking to them. I'm watching, trying to figure out what the hell's going on. I turn to Daisy and I say, "What do you think they're doing up there?" But she's got her nose in some book and she goes, "Shut up, I'm reading."
I looked over when Billy was writing his little list about whether Daisy should join the band, and he didn't have that many cons, and it seemed like he was really searching his brain for some. I said, "Make sure you write 'gives you a hard-on you'd rather not have' in the cons section." He told me I didn't know what I was talking about. I said, "All right, you don't want my opinion." He said, "Yes, I do." And I looked at him and he said, "Fine, I don't." So I sat back, sipped my Bloody Mary, and went back to reading the instructions on the barf bag.
Billy came back to where Graham and I were with this list. He'd slowly come to the conclusion that he wanted more hits and Daisy would bring us more hits. I said, "You know, she might turn us down." That thought never occurred to Billy or Graham. But Daisy had more hype than even we did.
"Graham, we decided we'd do one album with Daisy, see how it went."
I was making a decision that affected a lot of people. What is good for me might not necessarily be good for everybody else. I had to weigh that. Warren, Graham, Karen, Rod, they all wanted to get bigger to top the charts. We all did. I had to take that into account. No matter how much I may have preferred to keep a healthy distance from her personally.
I wasn't sure why Billy was stressing about it so much. He was just going to do whatever Teddy told him to do anyway.
People have said Billy didn't want Daisy to join the band because he didn't want to share the spotlight, but I don't think that was the case. Billy wasn't really an insecure guy in that way. That was sort of the problem with him, really, was that he wasn't intimidated by anyone else's talent. I think she just unsettled him, however you want to interpret that.
By the time we landed at LAX, I decided that it was a good idea to at least float the idea by Teddy. If he thought we should do an album with Daisy, then I'd ask her.
Rod. When we landed, I caught up to Billy and checked in, asked him what he was thinking. He said he wanted to talk to Teddy about whether Daisy should join the band. So I pulled Billy over to a payphone and I called Teddy and I said, "Teddy, tell Billy what you told me this morning."
Of course Teddy was on board with Daisy joining the band.
Teddy reminded me that when we first met, I'd told him I wanted to be the biggest band in the world. He said, "You two singing together is how you do that."
Eddie, when we landed, Pete and I caught up with Warren and Graham and Karen, and they said, "We're going to ask Daisy to join the band." And I couldn't believe it. Once again, no one fucking asked me.
They were all whispering and huddled up, and I caught Rod's eye, and he winked at me. And I knew.
I got off the phone with Teddy, and I said to Rod, "All right, tell her she's in." Then I got in a cab. And I went straight home to my girls.
When we all left the airport that day, we all headed in our own directions. It was like school was out for the summer.
The moment I walked in the door of my home, it was like Daisy and my band and the music and the gear and the tour. None of it existed. I was ready to get Camila strawberry ice cream at any hour of the night and to play any tea parties Julia wanted. My family was all that mattered.
Camila. Billy came home and he needed a day or two to decompress. But then there he was, with us when he was with us, and happy. And I thought, wow, okay, we're figuring this out. We're doing this right.
Rod. I gave it a few days. I let the dust settle a little bit, made sure Billy wasn't going to change his mind, and then I called Daisy.
I checked back into my favorite cottage at the Marmont.
Simone.
When Daisy got back from the road, I was back too. And I think it's important to mention that after that tour, Daisy was jacked up. I mean, she was higher than all get out, all the time. I thought, what happened to you out there? She could barely handle being alone, always calling people to come over, always begging me not to get off the phone. She didn't like being home by herself. She didn't like things being calm.
I was having a few people over when Rod called. It was the day I'd shot my Cosmo cover. I'd done an interview while we were in Europe, and that afternoon I'd done the photo shoot. Some of the girls from the shoot came over to my place afterward, and we were drinking pink champagne and about to go for a swim when the phone rang. I picked it up and I said, Lola Lakava speaking.
Daisy's pseudonym was always Lola Lakava. She had too many men trying to corner her. We had to start deflecting about where she was at any given time.
I remember the phone call exactly. I had the bottle of champagne in my hand, and there were two girls on the couch, and another one doing a line off my vanity. I remember being irritated because she was getting coke in the spine of my journal. But then Rod said, it's official.
I said, the band wants you to do a full album with them.
I was through the roof.
I could hear Daisy doing a bump as I talked to her. I always struggled with that when it came to my musicians, and it never got easier. Should I monitor their drug use or not? Was it any of my business? If I knew they were using, was it my place to determine how much was too much? If it was my place, then how much was too much? I never came up with an answer.
When we got off the phone, I screamed into the room, and one of the girls asked what I was so excited about, and I said, I'm joining the Six. None of them cared very much. In general, when you have drugs to spare and a nice cottage to do them in, you're probably not attracting people that care about you. But I was so happy that night. I danced around the room for a bit. I opened another bottle of champagne. I had more people over. And then around 3 a.m, when the party died down, I was too amped to go to bed. I called Simone and I told her the news.
I did worry. I wasn't sure being on tour with a rock band was turning out to be good for her.
I told Simone I was going to pick her up and we were going to celebrate.
It was the middle of the night. I'd been sleeping. I had my hair wrapped, my sleep mask on. I wasn't going anywhere.
She told me that she would come meet me in the morning for breakfast, but I kept insisting. She finally told me I didn't sound safe to drive. I got mad and got off the phone.
I thought she was going to bed.
I had too much energy running through me. I tried to call Karen, but she didn't answer. I finally decided I had to tell my parents. For some reason, I thought they would be proud of me. Not sure why. After all, I had the number 3 song in the country just a few months prior, and they hadn't so much as tracked me down to send a note. They didn't even know I was back in town. Suffice it to say, heading to their house at 4 a.m. was not the smartest idea. But you don't get high for smart ideas. Their place wasn't far, a mile down the road, a world away, so I decided to walk. I started up Sunset Boulevard and into the hills. I got to my parents about an hour later. So there I was, standing in front of my childhood home. And somehow, I decided that my old room looked lonely. So I climbed over the fence and up the gutter pipe, smashed the window of my bedroom, and got in my own bed. I woke up to see the cop standing over me.
I do wonder what I should have done differently with Daisy.
My parents didn't even know it was me in the bed. They heard somebody and called the police. Once it was straightened out, they weren't going to press charges, but by that point, the bag of coke in my bra, the joints in my change purse, it didn't look good.
I got a call that morning from Daisy from jail. I bailed her out and I said, Daisy, you gotta stop all this. And she just let it go in one ear and out the other.
I wasn't in jail long.
I saw her a few days later, and she had this cut on her right hand from the outside edge of her pinky all the way down past her wrist. I said, what happened here? She looked at it like it was the first time she'd seen it. She said, I have no idea. She started talking about something else, and then out of nowhere, about 10 minutes later, she goes, oh, I bet it's from when I smashed the window to break into my parents' house. I said, Daisy, are you okay? She said, yeah, why?
A few weeks after the tour ended, I woke up at 4 in the morning to Camila shaking my shoulders and telling me she was in labor. I grabbed Julie out of bed and raced Camila to the hospital. When she was lying in that bed, sweating and screaming, I held her hand, and I put a cold cloth on her head, and I kissed her cheeks, and I held her legs. Then we found out she had to have a C-section, and I stood right there as close as they'd let me, and I held her hand as she went in, and I told her she didn't need to be scared, that everything was going to be okay. And then there they were, my twin girls, Susanna and Maria, squished little faces, heads full of hair, but I could instantly tell them apart. I realized, looking at them, that I'd never seen a newborn. I'd never seen Julia as a brand new baby girl. I handed Maria over to Camila's mom for a moment, and I went into the bathroom, and I shut the door, and I broke down. I needed some time to deal with my own shame. But I did deal with it. I didn't try to bury it in something else. I went into that bathroom, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I faced it.
Graham. Billy was a good father. Yes, he'd been a drug addict who'd missed the first few months of his daughter's life, and yeah, that's shameful. But he was fixing himself. For his kids. He was making it right and doing better every single day. It was a hell of a lot more than any man in our family had ever done. He was sober and put his kids first. He would and did do anything for his family. He was a good man. I guess I'm saying if you redeem yourself, then believe in your own redemption.
I had this moment there in the hospital when it was just me and Camila and my three girls, and I thought, what am I doing out on the road? I went on this long, epic speech to Camila. I said, I'm giving it all up, honey. I don't want anything but this family, the five of us. That's all I want or need. I really meant it. I probably went on for 10 minutes. I said, I don't need rock and roll. I just need you. And Camila, keep in mind, she just had a C-section. I will never forget it. She goes, oh, shut the hell up, Billy. I married a musician. You'll be a musician. If I wanted to drive a station wagon and have a meatloaf ready at 6 o'clock, I would have married my father.
Camila. Billy would sometimes make these grand proclamations, and they sounded good because he's an artist. He knows how to paint a picture. But he was almost always on some flight of fancy. I'm the one that often had to say, yoo-hoo, hi, hello, come back down to the earth now, please.
Karen. Camila knew who Billy was better than he did. A lot of women would have said, you've had your fun, but we've got three kids now. Camila loved Billy exactly as he was. I dug that about her so much. And I really think Billy loved her the same way she loved him. I really do. When they were in the same place at the same time, you could tell he was just so taken with her. He'd stay quiet and let her be the one to talk. And I always noticed that he used to squeeze the lime into her drink before he handed it to her whenever we were all out somewhere. He'd take his own lime and squeeze it into her glass, too. He'd squeeze the two wedges in and then throw them in with the ice. It seemed like a beautiful thing to have, somebody giving you their lime wedge. I mean, I hate lime, actually, but you get the point.
Karen hated all citrus because she said it felt sticky on her teeth. That's why she hated soda, too.
Teddy came and visited us in the hospital. He brought this big bouquet for Camila and stuffed animals for the girls. As he was leaving, I walked him down to the elevators and he told me he was proud of me. He said I'd really turned it all around. I said I did it all for Camila. Teddy said I believe that.
When the twins were just a few weeks old, my mom had taken them for a walk one afternoon, and Billy asked me to sit down. He said he'd written another song for me.
It was called Aurora, because Camila, she was my Aurora. She was my new dawn, my daybreak, my sun peeking over the horizon. She was all of it. It was just a piano melody at that point, but I had all the lyrics. So I sat down at the piano and I played it for her.
The first time I heard it, I cried. I mean, you know the song. It would have been impossible for me to not feel bowled over by those words. He had written me others, but this one, I loved it. And I felt loved listening to it. And it was pretty, too. I would have loved that song even if it wasn't about me. It was that good.
She got teary, and then she said, "You need Daisy on it. You know that." And you know what? I did know that. Even as I was writing it, I had known it. I wrote it to be a piano and vocal harmony. Before we even got back into the studio, I was writing for Daisy.
Graham. That period of time when Billy was with his girls and Daisy was coming on board, well, it was a great opportunity for me to step up and take more of a center role in things. I was coordinating getting us all back together to start talking about a new album. I was discussing timelines with Rod and Teddy. It was fun. Actually, it wasn't that fun. It was just that I was happy. Everything seems fun when you're happy.
Karen, the money was rolling in. I wanted to make smart decisions with it, so I went out with a realtor for one day and found a pad in Laurel Canyon and bought it. Pretty soon, Graham unofficially moved in. We spent that spring and summer just the two of us together. We'd grill on the patio for dinner and go see shows every night and sleep late in the mornings.
Karen and I spent whole weekends high as shit, rich as hell, playing songs together and not telling anybody where we were or what we were up to. It was our little secret. I didn't even tell Billy. People say that life keeps moving, but they don't mention that it does stop sometimes, just for you. Just for you and your girl. The world stops spinning and just lets you two lie there. Feels like it anyway, sometimes, if you're lucky. Call me a romantic if you have to. Worst things to be.
Billy. I trusted Graham to handle everything with the band. I knew it was in good hands and my head was elsewhere.
Daisy. Simone left to make the rounds on another tour.
I was hitting the road for the Superstar album, and in between shows I was going to be based more in New York than L.A. The disco scene was really about doing the hustle at Studio 54, so that's where I was going.
She seemed worried about me. I told her, go on, I'll see you soon. I was excited about everything I had in front of me. I was joining a band.
I had everything straightened out. I talked to Rod and Teddy. Billy said he was ready to get started. And I had come up with a date to reasonably deliver an album, so I called a meeting.
Warren, I was starting to live large from the money coming in. I'd bought my boat by then. I had a one-bedroom Gibson that I docked in Marina Del Rey. Lots of cool chicks hanging out around there. Kept my drums at the house in Topanga and wasted away my nights and weekends drinking beers on the water.
Eddie. Pete had spent our downtime with Jenny back in Boston. They were getting really serious. Me, I didn't like being home. I like being on the road, you know what I mean? So I was ready to get back to work. I didn't even mind the idea of dealing with Billy that much. Now that's saying something. When Graham called to say it was time for us all to get together, I couldn't get there fast enough. I called to Pete and said, "You gotta get on the first flight back out here. Vacation's over."
We all met up at the Rainbow. The band, me, Rod, Teddy, and everybody was catching up. Warren was talking about his boat. Pete was talking about Jenny Maines, and Billy was showing Rod pictures of his twins. Everyone was really getting along. I mean, even Eddie and Billy seemed like they were doing all right. And Rod got up, and he had his beer in his hand, and he gave a toast about me joining the band.
Rod. I think I said, the seven of you are only headed higher and higher, or something like that.
I thought, boy, seven people in a band sounds like a lot.
Everyone was clapping, and Karen hugged me, and I felt really welcomed. I really did. So I stood up as everyone was talking, and I picked up my brandy, and I held it out for a toast, and I said, I am so glad you all invited me to join you on this album.
Daisy starts doing this little speech, and at first I think it's nothing major.
It was tough to get a read on Billy. He hadn't called me since I'd been offered a spot in the band. I hadn't heard much from anyone about how this was all going to go or how he was feeling about it. I just wanted to make sure everything was clear. I said, I'm coming on board officially because I want to be a member of this team, an important member. I hope you all see this album as mine just as much as it's anybody's, Graham's or Warren's or Pete's and Eddie's or Karen's.
Or Billy's, she goes. I looked right to Billy to see his reaction. He was sipping a soda out of a beer stein.
I thought, why does she need to start trouble already?
I said, you all brought me on because when we work together, we make better music than what we do apart. So I want to say in what music we're putting out. I want to write this album with you, Billy. Teddy had told me I could write my second album, and this felt like that chance. And I wanted to be clear, out of the gate, that's what I was chasing. I wanted to stand up in front of a crowd like I had that night singing When You Fly Low, a cappella. I wanted to sing songs from my heart right to the people in front of me. If the Six didn't want me for that, I didn't want whatever second prize they were offering.
Daisy didn't want Billy throwing a temper tantrum every time she tried to contribute something of her own. She was laying down the law early. Probably the way the rest of us should have from the beginning, if we wanted any sort of meaningful say. Certainly if Eddie had half of Daisy's balls, he would have solved his issues with Billy like that years ago.
I said, that's fine, Daisy. We're all in this together.
Warren, I didn't bother getting riled up about it because what was the point? But Billy was acting like this was one big hippie commune where everyone had a say, and that was a lie.
Billy did have a way of making you think you were crazy for even thinking things were unfair when, in fact, they were completely unfair. He wasn't even aware of the way everyone revolved around him.
The chosen ones never know they are chosen. They think everyone gets a gold carpet rolled out for them.
Pete chimed in at one point and said, while this is all out on the table, I'm taking full control over my own bass lines from here on out.
I told Pete I was fine with him writing his bass lines. He'd been writing most of his bass lines for a while.
I said, I'd like to step it up a bit. I think we can use me more often to round out songs, maybe even do a song just keys and vocals.
Eddie, I wanted to say in what I was playing. Everyone's chiming in like Billy's trying to control them, and he did, but he was really controlling me. I said, I write my own riffs from here on out.
I just kept thinking, of course Eddie's throwing a fit. I started to say something, and Teddy put his hand out, kind of gave me a look like, don't talk right now, just hear them out. Teddy and I both knew that some people needed to feel heard, whether or not you actually listened to them.
Look, I really like Daisy, and I like Karen. I wanted her to be able to contribute more. But a female vocalist on the whole album and more keys? Karen's keys were softening us too much as it was, if you ask me. I said, I want to make sure we're still a rock band. Graham said, what do you mean? I said, I don't want to be in a pop band. This isn't Sonny and Cher over here. Billy bristled at that.
I was just getting shit on all night. I'm thinking, what did I ever do to you people, except take us this far?
I thought Eddie's point was well made. How was our music going to change with Daisy coming in, especially if she was writing? But of course, Billy felt like it was just people attacking him. When you have everything, someone else getting a little something feels like they're stealing from you.
Everything that was happening, it was all really undefined. Was Daisy a permanent part of the Six? I didn't know. I know Daisy didn't know. I don't even think Billy knew.
I had been mulling this over for a while, of how the billing would work and what I felt I deserved. I said, if you all will commit to this and you want me to join as a member of the Six, then I'll be a member of the Six. My name doesn't need to be featured, but if it's temporary, then we need to discuss some other type of billing.
You could just tell that Daisy was expecting us to say she was a member of the Six.
Billy said, how about the Six featuring Daisy Jones?
That's how Honeycomb was built. So I understood what Billy was trying to do.
I thought, wow, okay. He didn't even give it a second thought.
She gave me two options. If she didn't want me to have two options, she shouldn't have given two options.
Warren, I just thought, let the girl join the band, man.
Teddy could see that things were headed in a tense direction. He had tried to keep quiet most of the discussion, but he finally piped in and said, you'll be Daisy Jones and the Six. And no one was happy. But everyone was kind of equally dissatisfied.
I think Teddy wanted to make sure my name was prominent. I brought attention to the band. My name needed to be front and center.
Teddy was trying to protect the sanctity of the Six. We didn't want to promise anything to Daisy.
I don't think Billy actually resented what I asked for. All of it was reasonable. He was just pissed because I knew how much power I had, and he would have preferred I either not know it or not use it. I'm sorry, but that is not my style. I mean, it shouldn't be anybody's, really. Billy had been riding a bit too comfortable on the fact that everybody let him do what he wanted, and I was the first person to say, you're only in charge of me as much as I'm in charge of you. And that opened the floodgates for Pete and Eddie and, well, everybody.
Teddy told the band that Runner wanted the album toward the top of 78. It was already August. Creative differences and ego checks and all that aside, it was back to the salt mines.
After we walked out of there that night, I thought, holy shit. Daisy had just joined our band with top billing and fundamentally changed the dynamics of the group in a way that none of us had done before.
Everyone always acted like I was such a difficult guy. But Daisy asked for an equal say in billing, and I gave her both. What more did she want? I mean, I wasn't even sure it was the right thing to do, but I did it to keep her happy, to keep everybody happy.
We became a democracy instead of an autocracy, and democracy sounds like a great idea, but bands aren't countries.
To be honest, I thought Daisy would get tired of trying to write an album pretty quickly. I underestimated her. Let me tell you this, don't ever doubt Daisy Jones.
Aurora, 1977 to 1978. In August 1977, the seven members of the band entered Wally Heider's Studio 3 to begin the process of recording their third album.
Graham, Karen and I left her place that morning, heading over to Heider. I said to her, just as we walked out of the door, can't we just drive over together? She said she didn't want people thinking we were sleeping together. I said, but we are sleeping together. She still made us take two cars.
You know how easy it is to screw up your entire life by sleeping with somebody in your own band?
Eddie. Pete and I drove over that morning. By that point, I think he and I were the only two still staying at the place in Topanga Canyon. Before he'd gone back from the East Coast, I'd had the place all to myself. I said to Pete on the way there, I said, this should be interesting. And he told me not to take it all so seriously. He said, it's just rock and roll. None of this really matters.
When we all met up at the studio that first day, I brought this basket of cakes that someone had sent over to my place at the Marmont. and my notebook full of songs. I was ready.
Daisy showed up in a thin tank top and these tiny cutoff shorts. Barely covered anything.
I run hot, and I always have. I'm not going to sit around sweating my ass off just so men can feel more comfortable. It's not my responsibility to not turn them on. It's their responsibility to not be an asshole.
I had written about 10 or 12 songs so far, all of them in great shape. But I knew I couldn't go in there and tell them that I'd written the album already, like I did with the other two albums. I couldn't say that.
It was kind of funny, to be honest, watching Billy put on this act like he gave a shit what anyone else wanted on the album. God bless him. You could see the effort he was putting in, talking all slow, thinking about his words.
We were sitting around and I handed over my notebook. I said, I've got a lot of good stuff in here to start from. I thought maybe everyone could read it all and we could discuss it from there.
Here I am, holding back my 12 great songs so that no one thinks I'm trying to control things, and Daisy's just walking into a band she's brand new to, expecting everyone to read a whole journal of ideas.
He didn't even flip through it.
If Daisy and I were going to write an album together, it needed to be just the two of us. You can't give seven people a say in the words. Somebody had to take charge and control the process. So I said, look, I wrote this song, Aurora. It's the one I really believe in out of everything I'm working on for this album. The rest is up to us all. Daisy and I will write some songs and everyone will take a crack at the arrangements. And once we've got a slate of great songs that we all love, we'll narrow it down to the best of the best.
Maybe it's revisionist history, but I think when Billy played Aurora, it felt clear that we could build an album around it.
We were all on board with Aurora as a great place to start. It was a great frickin' song. After that, Daisy started talking about ideas for the album as a whole.
Warren, I wanted no part in writing. That morning felt like a waste of my time. Everyone sitting around talking about shit I don't care about. I finally just said, don't you all think that Daisy and Billy should go write the songs and come to us when they have them?
Teddy was really decisive about it. He handed Billy the keys to his guest house and said, you two pop on over to my place, set up in my guest house, and get to writing. Everyone else is going to get to work on this new one.
Billy didn't want us composing anything for that song without him. But he also didn't want Daisy writing songs without him. So we had to choose whether he went with Daisy and got started writing, or stayed with us and worked on the arrangement for his new song. And he chose Daisy.
I got to Teddy's pool house first, and so I got settled. Made myself a cup of coffee, sat down, looked through my notes, trying to decide what to show Daisy.
By the time I opened the door, Billy's already there. He's got his notebook out to show me. Not so much as a hello, just, here, read my stuff.
I told her the truth. I said, I've got a lot of the album written already. You want to take a good look at it and see where we can make adjustments together? See if maybe there's some gaps that we can fill in with some new stuff or stuff you've written already.
I shouldn't have been surprised. It was never going to be easy with him, was it? I think I grabbed one of the bottles of wine I saw on Teddy's counter and I opened it up and flopped myself down on the sofa and just started drinking it. I said, Billy, that's great that you've written a bunch of songs already. I have too, but we're writing this album together.
The woman is drinking warm white wine before it's even noon and trying to lecture me on how things should go. She hadn't even read my songs yet. I handed my work over to her and I said, read it first before you go telling me I should throw it away.
I said, ditto then. And I shoved my notebook in his face. I could tell he didn't want to read it, but he knew he had to.
I read her stuff, and it wasn't bad. But it wasn't the six. She used so many biblical metaphors, so when she asked me what I thought, I told her that. I said we should start with my stuff. As the backbone, we can refine it together. Daisy was sitting on the sofa with her feet up on the coffee table, which irked me. And then she said, I'm not singing an entire album about your wife, Billy.
I really liked Camila, but Signora was about her. Honeycomb was about her. Aurora was about her. It was boring.
I said, you're writing the same song, too. We both know every song in this book is about the same thing. Well, that got her upset. She put her hands on her hips and said, what is that supposed to mean? And I said, every single one of these songs is about the pills in your pocket.
Billy got this smug